I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the Amazing FBA podcast. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Today, talking to a very experienced Amazon seller who's very relaxed for an Amazon trainer as well, Stephen Summers from Marketplace Superheroes. And I think the reason Stephen's relaxed is because he's been there and got the t-shirt and been to this rodeo a trillion times. I've trained a lot of people up, made a lot of sales in Amazon. So, we are delighted to have somebody that experienced. Marketplace Superheroes, just to let you know, is they teach people how to build a global business using private label on Amazon. They also provide some key services for sellers like global freight, translations, photography. And that, interestingly, what makes them different, I think, is that it's in-house. In other words, they don't outsource it. They've gone to the expense and trouble of building their own in-house systems for that. So we'll be digging into that soon. But first, Stephen, warm welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Michael. I'm delighted to be here and delighted to be on such a practical, informational podcast. This will be great.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the compliment, that because we do try and be very practical about things. And we'll be asking some tough questions in a second about the business model of private label.
Bring
to make
on.
Sure that we're absolutely square and honest with people. First, just a little bit of background about you. First, I hear a bit of an Irish accent there. Where are you coming to us from?
Yes. So I am from a little town called Wexford. In Ireland. It is definitely not a tech center. It is definitely not somewhere where there's tons of Amazon sellers. In fact, I don't know anybody else other than myself here who sells on Amazon, but I'm sure there are a few. Actually, that said, I do know a few because there are some clients of ours. So that's actually not correct. But that said, yeah, so like my business partner, Robert Rickey, he is from Northern Ireland, actually. And I've been working with Robert now for nearly 10 years at this point in time. And like a lot of people listening, you know, I started from scratch, didn't know what I was doing. I was very fortunate in that Robert was my initial mentor, has been my business partner now for, like I say, 10 years, taught me everything I know, certainly on the Amazon front. Obviously, as time has gone on, you know, we started different businesses. Like you mentioned a few of them, like our freight company and stuff like that, which we can dive into. I was a complete beginner. I just wanted to start a business that could, you know, give me some level of freedom at some point in my life. I worked as a data processor in my early 20s, typing information from a computer into a screen. You know, it was it was just so boring. But again, very green, complete beginner. And was looking like a lot of people were for, like, you know, how to make money online and all that kind of stuff. And just kept finding like the typical, you know, become an affiliate marketer, become this, become that. And, you know, some of those are legit businesses, of course. But for me, I hadn't enough experience to do it on my own. So I searched around for a number of years trying out these different, you know, digital business models, and it just didn't work for me. I never stuck to anything and never took it that seriously, you know, where I went all in. And so basically I got to the point where I said to myself, you know, like, I'm not an expert in anything. I don't have no experience. So what can I do where I can feel good about it? I feel like it's a real business. And for me, I just thought, well, I should sell physical products on the internet. And so that's where it started. And I kept searching about for, well, you know, courses and all that. And really, like 10, 12 years ago, there wasn't as many courses as there are now. Certainly that market was nowhere near as kind of sophisticated as it is now. And so I started out by thinking I was going to do drop shipping and, you know, went down that line, started looking at different types of products that I could sell, drop shipping and get my own site and everything going. and was really going down that line in a big way when I got a bit of fortune that I met this guy called Robert, as I mentioned, still my business partner today. And he was selling his own products as well as some wholesale items on Amazon, on eBay in the UK at the time. He's from Northern Ireland, as I mentioned. He had a warehouse, two warehouses, actually. He had about eight staff, and they were doing all the fulfillment themselves. They weren't using FBA at the time. And, you know, I just said to him, can I come up and check out your operation? So he, luckily for me, he said, yeah. I think it was because my aunt was actually a friend of his, was sort of how I got the foot in the door, right? And so I went up. I see a freezing cold warehouse, you know, products in boxes all over the place. And, you know, I got really excited about it because I actually saw orders coming in on a computer and all these people picking and packing, shipping items out. And I got very excited about it because I thought, like, this looks really legit now. This is I can see it in front of me, right? It's like, it's happening. And so basically I just said to Rob, like, I really want to do more of this. I want to learn how to do this. And so I quit my job. It was a government job, actually. So, you know, see you later to retirement. I actually got my retirement money of like $3,000 or something from them and utilized that to get started. And basically I just started working in the warehouse, you know, picking and packing items for Robert for free, just to learn the ropes and learn how everything worked. And I was reading a lot of business books at the time, like The E-Myth by Michael Gerber and stuff like that. Started learning a little bit about systems and processes and was really watching what Robert was doing. So I was able to kind of apply what I was reading to our live business, which was great. And so we started to become very close. Like, we're working together every single day. I worked in everything from customer support to, you know, to fulfillment, to devanning containers, everything you can imagine. And so I did that for nearly a year, about 9 months to nearly a year. And at that point, like, I learned a lot. I was selling stuff myself on eBay, kind of like items that would have been used that were just lying around the warehouse, getting dusty. They weren't stuff you could sell brand new on Amazon. So it was sort of tricky to move them on. So I used to just like list them at auction on eBay. Sometimes there were fixed price, you know, listings, and just started selling and started learning about things like, you know, copywriting, writing better listings. I was teaching myself like HTML to make eBay HTML listings back in the day. And so I got a really great education with Robert over those 9 months. And then really we came to that point in time where it was like, you know, it's very stressful. This is, you know, there's no real freedom here. We're picking and packing stuff every single day. We've got lots of staff members and all of that. And that's whenever we started thinking about, well, maybe we should be using this thing, Amazon FBA. So it's a long time ago now, you know, 10 years ago. And so FBA was obviously available for a couple of years before that, but it was just not as developed as it is today now in 2020. And so we just started thinking, well, let's start shipping some boxes over. So we started shipping some boxes over to the UK initially of the different products that we were selling, different private label items, some wholesale items. We used to get deals from wholesalers and, you know, like pack them up and create new listings on Amazon for different things. We were selling like a lot of Philips lighting and stuff like that at the time, actually. So we got some really good deals on light bulbs and things like that. So we did that and, you know, saw our sales in FBA. Once we moved to FBA, we're so much better. You know, the conversions were much higher and that was really interesting. Then we said, well, what if we went fully FBA? Like completely. And we really stopped doing all this warehousing, we stopped doing all this kind of stuff and went all in on FBA. So it took time. We worked on this together for like nearly well over another year after that. Just literally two of us in warehouses, we slowly started getting rid of all the staff members, which was unfortunate, but, you know, it was what we had to do if we were going to go completely FBA. And really at that time, we just saw it and said, you know, there's only a few of these private label products Robert had been doing in the consumer electronics accessories market, TV bracket stands, that kind of stuff, that we can still sell because it became an untenable market at that time. So we said, like, what if we start selling different products in different niches? You know, so we started looking around and saw stuff like vacuum storage bags and cedar hangers and all these random products, right? And started to build a bit of a process around how we were identifying them. We started private labeling them, brought in containers of them, you know, cobbled together the money together to do it. And, you know, like I say, over the next year, we really, really built this cool, pretty much all private label company. Where we're selling all these different products and we just grew it from there. We did keep doing some wholesale products, of course, but you know, we saw that we were selling products that were really not that profitable at wholesale at the time. So we made this kind of statement, which was we're going to focus pretty much all on private label. We did a big 80-20 analysis of the different products that were really pushing the business forward. And we saw like there was a small number of products that were doing a lot of the pushing. This was just before we identified we need to go into a lot of different markets. And yeah, we just started selling all these different items in different categories on Amazon, and we built it up. And so at that point then, you know, we said, well, okay, it's doing pretty well in the UK. Maybe we should start doing other countries. So we started with the US, and that was really hard, right? Because this is how old we are now. We had to go and find like people in the US who had companies, had warehousing that we could ship our products over to, you know, and then from there we started that they would self-fulfill, and then slowly we started to move products into Amazon as well, using FBA, just like we did in Europe. So that did really well in the US as well, even though we were selling some kind of competitive items. So they did well. I'd say now, like those, some of the products we sold, you know, they are too competitive now. Things have changed and we've moved since then. We've moved on, and our members are the same. They've moved on. And you know, really what we saw was if we can sell lots of products that make a small number of sales in multiple countries, you know, we can do well at this. And so in Europe, then we started to open up other countries. And at the time, EFN, this European Fulfillment Network, which some of you will know about, which we'll chat about, it wasn't even available back then. You actually had to send your products to different countries like, you know, France, Germany, et cetera. Of course, creating tax problems for ourselves, which we, you know, knew about and didn't know about and had to learn at the time. And even when new countries like Italy and Spain came on, we had to like, we had to get like bank accounts in those countries, which was hard. We'd use an intermediary. So we had all these issues. Like, but we started selling in multiple countries and doing really well. We're probably doing about nearly $2 million a year in revenue at that time, at a 30% net profit. You know, we've made millions and millions of dollars in sales now over the years on Amazon. Robert, you know, obviously started a lot more before me. He was in 96, he was started selling online. So, you know, I don't even know how much that guy has generated in sales online. Obviously, it's not all profit, and we're very clear about that. You know, 30% of our private label sales price is what we would shoot for as a net profit before tax. You know, built this business where we're selling in multiple countries. We didn't need warehousing anymore. We got rid of that. And, you know, we did that for a number of years, just working together, selling in a lot of different countries, adding more and more products into our business. And then, of course, you know, about 5 years ago now, you know, there was a lot of different people started teaching FBA, like selling on Amazon, right, through FBA. And we looked at it and we were like, you know, well, you know, I thought back to when I got started and I just didn't know how to get into business. I had no clue. I was completely a beginner. And we looked at what people were teaching and we felt like, yeah, look, it's good stuff or whatever, but we have our own way of doing things. We sell these kind of, you know, boring products. We sell them in multiple countries. We make sales. We do our numbers. Robert's the numbers guy. He's brilliant at it. I would say the best in the world in this market at really breaking down numbers in the Amazon business. And, you know, we felt like we had something to add to the market. And so we decided to start teaching people completely unknown. We had no following. We had nothing. And we just started teaching people that we knew first. They did well. You know, we started then teaching other groups that were already out there. Like we started teaching them about how to sell in Europe and stuff like that. We'd figure a lot of those processes out. And then just over the next, you know, couple of years, we just started sharing what we'd learned with a lot more people. Now, you know, Marketplace Superheroes, it's 5 years later, like we've 6,000 students now. And you know, we decided like over the last couple of years, like, you know, we don't want to just be people who just teach this, you know, it'd be nice if we also were able to offer some different services that people need because, you know, we've been shipping stuff, Robert, much longer than me from China. And one of the big problems we identified, which a lot of people I'm sure have come across, is the fact that, you know, you're shipping, say, an LCL, a less than container load with a freight forwarder, which means you're only doing a small shipment. So you have to get onto somebody else's container. A freight forwarder will do that for you. It's very expensive, you know, and then they'll quote you shipping. But by the time you receive that product into the port, they're going to add in so many charges the whole way down. You know, it's just tons of charges and it works out very expensive. So, you know, we tried for the last 3 years to solve that problem. We tried partnering with freight forwarders and utilizing the part of their warehouse. just didn't work out, to be completely honest. You know, it started well and then we started running into trouble and we didn't control the process. And so, you know, we've made money, yes, from teaching people how to do this, but we've cycled all that back in to grow like a freight company now, Superhero Freight, which at the moment we only have members utilizing, but we will change that this year at some point. Whereby what we actually enable people to do now is we run containers from China to the US, China to the UK, China to Australia. And what we do is we enable people to join the network. Then what they can do is they can pre-buy shipping credits from us. So we sell cubic meters, because anybody who knows, if they've been shipping containers, you pay for the cubic meter. You're utilizing up the space you're using up. So we basically sell cubic meter sizes to our members. And because they then know how much they're going to pay ahead of time, they're able to plan for their shipping costs a lot more effectively. So we were able to save our members a lot of money on shipping. We obviously control the warehouses. We control everything. So, you know, that's the journey we're on now, you know, really teaching, yes, of course. But what makes us different, I think, is that we really offer tangible services to people. And believe me, if it was all about money, it would be a lot easier to never have offered those freight services, because it's so hard. It's going to take us probably another 2 years before that makes a real profit, to be really upfront. When it does work, it really will work very well, which is exciting. But, you know, for us, we're not doing it for we're not Mother Teresa or anything. I'm not saying that, you know. But at the same time, like, we do have a real goal to offer things to people, especially people that are listening, like, that might be smaller sellers. You know, they're not shipping containers often like we used to do and still do. Many of our students do. You know, there are students we have, by the way, who are very big sellers now, doing phenomenally well. And they don't necessarily utilize Superhero Freight for containers, because that's not what it's designed for. They use it to test new products and stuff like that, where they can ship it at a discount, almost at a container-like price that they would get on their own container. Not quite, but close. So yeah, that's the journey we've been on, Michael. And, you know, here we are.
Well, that's the most epic journey. I think I'm used to hearing, okay, what's people's, you know, journey into being, you know, a service provider or a trainer or whatever it is for Amazon sellers. But that's pretty much takes the record for the most epic. Maybe it's that Irish storytelling tradition, you know.
There you go. Maybe it's that, yeah.
Maybe it's that. But that's pretty amazing. I mean, a few things that jumped out to me that I identified with. One is the making money online wilderness that I think a lot of people who are listening would be able to identify with, whether even if they're now very successful with their own Amazon business, that, you know, trying different stuff, not sticking to anything. Affiliate marketing is a classic thing people consider. Drop shipping always comes up. And by the way, I'm sure there are people making money with affiliate marketing or drop shipping. So I'm not anti those. By the way, I make money with affiliate 100%. Marketing.
Me too.
That's fine. But the point is, I love the fact that for you, what seemed to be a turning point for you was finding a mentor and seeing something physically in operation. Although, ironically, you helped to then kill that and turn it into FBA-based business. But I knew what you mean. There is an excitement about, and I think it is important to have an excitement. I was reflecting on this recently. I was thinking about, you know, I've been in the, I guess, the Amazon game for about 5 years now, one way or the other, and go through waves of love-hate relationships with Amazon, which everyone has, and with e-commerce generally sometimes. And I think one of the important things is to recapture, just like a relationship, like a marriage or like a job, if you have a job or a profession, to recapture some of the excitement. Because I do think it is important. As you mentioned yourself, yeah, money is important. We're not Mother Teresa, as you put it. But I think it's really delusional, my experience, that if you think the money is going to motivate you enough to get you through even the first year, in my experience, it never is. The people that I know who quit, generally because they just lose momentum and they lose that kind of hunger for it. And the people I know who've done well, just really disciplined. But the discipline is driven by a vision of where they want to be, but also you've got to enjoy the process. That's like saying, like, I hate rugby, but I want to become an international rugby star and then I'll enjoy the money. I'm like, dude, if you don't like the game, don't play the game, because you'll not enjoy the process. It takes a while to get rich. So there's a few things that struck me about that.
There's loads, and I'll just pick up on that point because it's just something I've been reading of late. It's a book by Simon Sinek called The Infinite Game.
Yes.
Very interesting book, you know, and it's kind of like what you're describing there, right? It's like when you go into any business, Amazon, you know, we call it an Amazon business because obviously Amazon's the main driving marketplace that people are utilizing. I mentioned in our story that, you know, whenever I met Robert, just so everybody knows, like, eBay was actually much bigger than Amazon in Robert's business at the time, which is why they self-fulfilled everything. But that changed very quickly as Amazon really started to, you know, go heavy on the FBA process on more of the UK market and beyond. And it's obviously just increased since then. Like, you know, eBay is only a fraction of Amazon now. But again, it's another marketplace, something people can consider, et cetera, which we'll get into, I'm sure. But the point of the infinite game is like, yeah, like for me, it was the same. Like, you know, I remember Robert breaking down the numbers of a private label and saying, like, you know, whatever we invest in a product, we're looking to double the value of that investment. So if we put $2,000 into a product between 6 to 9 months, we're looking to double that to $4,000. And to me, that was kind of like demotivating because I was like, oh, well, I thought I was going to be making 10 grand a month every month, like everyone talks about, right? And I was going to just do it overnight with no real reasoning behind it. But what I learned from Robert early on, and something we teach our members still, obviously, is like, you got to be realistic as well with a business like selling physical products on Amazon that are your own branded products, because you have to purchase them. They have to get produced. They have to then be imported. They then have to get into the Amazon system. Then, you know, you can run some PPC and everything to get some initial traction to your listing. But like, it takes time, like for that listing to bed in and everything. And so for me, like that was definitely a factor when I started. And so as you just said, Michael, very, very well, like if your only goal is to come in and make loads of money really quickly, any e-commerce business is not, well, I wouldn't say any, but most e-commerce businesses, like they don't run that way. And by the way, the real world doesn't work that way, right? And that's the world we're all in. We're in the real world. And I think sometimes, you know, internet marketers, as they're known, and I don't classify myself as one, you know, they will come in and tell you all these huge figures. And in some cases, like, yeah, I've seen people do big figures very quickly, but there was a process behind it, right? They put a lot of money down in inventory. They did things that a lot of people are not prepared to do. And so for me, the way that I was able to get started and grow faster, some people will say, well, oh, you had Robert there and he had loads of money. And I can tell you now, Robert did not, because the company that we were talking about, I said that the items were saturated, we had to change quickly and all of that. Like that was a really painful experience for Robert, especially because it was his company that he had a business partner he had to uncouple from. Complete product line, you know, was no longer really viable anymore. So we had a very difficult time when we started and we had to make it work because we didn't have anything else to go to. I remember when we started, like we were both earning £750 a month and my rent was £475 a month. So, you know, I didn't have money, but we put everything back into the business to get it going. If I had my time over, I would say what I would have done is learn more high income skills ahead of time, maybe get into sales or something like that would have been my path. Utilize that money to grow my Amazon business. And again, I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm just being upfront, you know, like, and again, when you have patience, like what you were saying there, Michael, and you treat it more like an infinite game where you're growing something, you know, it's going to take time, but you're growing consistently. Like I see our members do phenomenally well, you know, Pete and Rich, I've got an interview with them on my YouTube channel. You can watch it. Like those guys, like they went from no business at all to in their first year, I think they did maybe 200 grand sales. Again, that's about 60 grand profit-ish. But this year, they're well on track to doing $1 million in sales, and they should do about $250,000-$300,000 in net profit before tax. But those guys, they put the money down. Like they've invested in products, they've got them into stock, and they're selling. And they told me, actually, most of their products have all been winners, which has been great. It's not, I wouldn't say that's common. I would say for us, about 6 to 7 out of 10 of our products are successful. I would say the three or four out of 10 that don't do very well, you could probably say 2 of them, like they're fine, but they probably took more than 9 months to sell out. So they probably, there's something we should keep on, but we just wouldn't store it all on Amazon because, you know, you're gonna have long-term storage fees and stuff like that. And then 2 of them, probably one of the two just is just a loser, just didn't do well. It's just get rid of it. And the other one is probably just, you know, it will sell out, but it's probably going to take like 18 months or something. And again, sometimes those products turn and they become better and they work better for you and stuff like that. So again, I'm not saying 10 out of 10 of our products are successful at all. But what I will tell you is that like I've seen a lot of our members do phenomenally well, but the only people who do well with a private label business are the people, number one, that learn a process from someone. I don't recommend going it alone. And again, people will say, well, Stephen, you teach a course and of course you'll say that. No, like I didn't go it alone. I had no clue what I was doing. I learned from an in-person mentor. And if you can get that experience, I would start there for sure. it's the best experience you're going to get. But like, we're in the real world again, right? There's a lot of people listening here today. We're started like me. You have a job. You want to do something. You want a real business. You don't want the kind of a, you know, a virtual weird one, even though a lot of the stuff we do is virtual, right? But you just want something you can understand, which I totally get. But yeah, so you come in, you get some money down. I would tell people in dollars, $1,000 to $3,000 for a product is about right. Investing, you know, different people say different figures. That's probably about right-ish. Depends on the product, depends on the cost price. Again, lots of different variables, but that's just like a rough estimate. And then you get that in, you get it selling, and you go from there. And here's the thing. And this is a question, Michael, I'll ask you, right, real briefly. Like, you live in the UK, and in your local town, let's say you want to start a cafe. How much would you say it would cost you to start a coffee shop in your local town, roughly?
Well, my local town happens to be London, so it's incredibly expensive. But I'm in North London, which is like a local cafe here. I mean, I'd imagine if you wanted to buy the building, you're looking at probably £1 or 2 million. So the rent's going to be £3,000-4,000 a month. You're going to have business rates. I have no idea what that is because I've never wanted to start a physical location for that kind of reason. You're going to have, oh, I don't know. I mean, you're looking at, I guess, 50 grand. I don't know, maybe 30. I can't imagine that you do it for less than tens of thousands. Maybe it'd be 100. I've never tried and I've no interest in trying for those exact reasons, man.
Yeah, but that's it. That's
humbling thought there. You're right, as a comparison point.
It's the point entirely though, right? So like, you know, you go, there's loads of people start cafes every day, restaurants every day, but then they go and they get money from a bank to start that business. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But then when we go to an online business, what happens? Everybody says, what's the least amount of money I can start with? Why? You know, because people don't think it's a real business. Got news for you. Real business.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it, actually. I think there's two reasons why people don't want to start with much money. But I think one is that they don't have much at the moment. But then, as you pointed out, the solution to that is get a day job. And and the other one, as you said, they don't think it's real because it's virtual, or, you know, even the word virtual assistant, for example. I've got a virtual assistant. I was speaking to this morning, once coming on board. They're real people. They just happen to be in a different time zone. They're still staying up late to talk to me. It's real for them. So yeah, that's a very good point. You're right. I think that's what it is. I mean, my wife and I just spent a substantial sum just investing in property, and geez, you know, the tax situation makes you think, like US sales tax on Amazon goods, not so bad. And we pay tens of thousands in stamp duty tax, and then the actual money you got to put down and the debt you end up with is frightening. And that's just a classic alternative, sort of, you know, apart from make money online, the other thing people tend to look at in the UK, because it's property obsessed for whatever reason, same as the US, is property, or real estate, as you would call it if you're an American listening. But yeah, you're right. You've got to put this stuff in context. And thank you for being willing to put this through, because I really honestly think that the mentality you come in with has got to be something to do with, you get crazy statistic. I don't know what the latest ones are, but in 2016, there was something like 98% of seller central accounts on Amazon were inactive after a year. And there's got to have something to do with the fact that the things you just mentioned that people don't think is real. So they kind of dabble and then they run away screaming as soon as it looks like real work. So I do think the mentality is important. And,
oh, boy, yeah. 100%. You've got to come in like an investor. 100%. You do. And again, I'm not saying run out and get a bank loan. I'm not saying that. But here's what I would also mention, right? Like, when you, whatever money you start with, like you start with, right? And again, I would always tell people, if you want to start conservatively, that's great. Because I think that's good advice for anybody in any business. And you can do it with this business. But the nice thing is, you can start conservatively. You can, in China, let's say you get your goods produced in China, for example, a lot of people do, a lot of our members do. Like in China, then, let's say you split up your inventory, you send 60% of it to the US, 40% to Europe, or vice versa, whatever you feel on your research, that's the right way to go. But then you start making some sales, you start getting some traction. Now you're getting proven real data, right? Real data back from the market. And then, you know, you may have to reorder at that point because you can see, well, based on where my numbers are going, it's like, I know it's going to take me 3 months to get my products back into stock. So I better place an order now or whatever. And you do that. But then, like, you're getting data all the time. And you can, I've done this. I mean, it's something we do all the time. Like, I brought that data to a bank, for example. I sat down with the bank manager. Of course, now you got to call them now usually, right? And speak to them on a call. But when you provide real data to them, these are the products I'm selling. Here's where I'm getting them from. Here's my cost price. Here's how much it cost me to bring them into stock. Here's how many sales I'm making monthly. Like, you're coming with a really powerful proposition because you're showing something that's somewhat quote unquote proven to somebody who will then invest in that. And with a lender, like a proper real high street lender, you know, again, the rates are always going to change, but you're not going to pay, you know, any more than 10%. Like, I mean, right? So again, it's going to be a short-term loan or whatever. So then when you look at that, even an overdraft is about 7%, or say 7.5-ish. So then you look at that and you say, well, if I'm making 100%, what we would call profit on investment, meaning I put in a pound, I make £2, you know, let's say before tax, right? So I've doubled my money. So that's good. So then, because £1 to pay it back. So then you will say, okay, well, I'm doubling my money. And if that's 100%, would I pay 10% so that I don't have to finance that anymore? And you're like, well, that would make sense. So like, that's just a snapshot into anybody listening, like what you can do when you get some proof of concept. The problem out there is, right, is that people go into any business with no proof of concept and it becomes a massive risk because they don't know. Whereas at least when you put some of your capital up front, you get some market data back, you can come with a lot of certainty at that point. Now, the other thing as well, just on that whole thing about the, you know, virtual businesses and everything, here's the thing for everybody listening, right? The government don't give a damn if it's virtual or not. All they see is money in your bank account. And that's going to be something that they're going to, you know, deal with. They're going to want taxes and all that if you're profitable. Of course, you only pay tax if you're profitable other than VAT or sales tax, which we can chat about. But the point entirely is, like, these are real businesses, everybody. And so I just want to encourage anybody listening today, if this is something you're interested in doing, and it doesn't matter if you learn with me, Michael, whoever it's going to be, a proven process I recommend, go in, you know, expecting to put in capital. Because here's the thing, if you think about somebody like an Olympic ski jumper, right? So like to jump off the ski jump, the ramp, I don't know what it's called, I have no idea. They have to go downhill first, right? Downhill. So before there's an upward movement for that person, there's an initial downward movement. And it's the same thing, any business, like you have to expect an initial downward movement of resources, i.e. money, and you invest in something and then you obviously expect the increase when you're selling. But the problem a lot of people have from a mentality point of view, Michael, which I get because I was one of those people, is we've only ever spent your life maybe working in a job, which is cool. I'm not downing that at all. But here's the thing. What have you been doing? You've been buying food, mortgage, clothing, gas, electric. Like these are all expenses, right? In your life and my life. But if you've only ever had expenses and you're paying for that, you're paying out money, but you're not seeing, you don't get a return on your electricity bill, right? It doesn't work like that. So you're only ever paying out. You don't know that there's such a thing as I put in money and I expect it to multiply. You know, that's my goal there. And that's the investor mentality. You know, that takes a while to learn, but anybody listening, like, just know that that's normal. It's normal to be afraid when you're placing an order for a number of products or a product. And that's why, like myself, having someone in your corner, Michael, ourselves, whoever's going to be, that's why it's important, because you need somebody sometimes to put the hand on your shoulder and say, yeah, that's the right thing. That product looks really good. It's going to, you know, that's one to place an order on. And so, because the alternative then, which I see a lot, is people then do some product research and they just pick any product because they're like, oh, that's selling, so I'll just sell it. And I'll do marketing behind it. I'll do all these things. But like our whole thing at Marketplace Superheroes is we place a lot of emphasis on research, time researching, looking at the market. And we really do look for products that are not trendy. They're not sexy. They're boring as hell. They've been selling for a long time. They're going to sell for a long time. And they're not ones that like are going to, we're not expecting to sell 100, 200 units a day of a product. We're just not. Now, sometimes we've had many products that have been businesses in their own right. You know, I've seen it many times and they continue to be. But you can't expect that going in. But the only way you ever get to that is you got to get beyond the investment at the start and you got to place an order down. And if not for Robert, I don't think I would have gotten over that threshold at the start myself. I'd have been too afraid because I had no one to be there for me. So that's just some thoughts on that anyway, Michael.
Thank you. Well, that's very interesting that we came in with a sort of a bit of a plan for what we're going to talk about. And actually, we've ended up talking about, I would say, your experience and actually your journey. It's kind of a mentality journey, which is interesting. I'm always very wary of things that get too unconcrete. And we'll certainly, in our next episode, I think, going to go digging into how you managed to get such a winner percentage of 6 or 7 out of 10 are winning. Most people might focus on the 3 that are losing. But for me, that's an amazing hit rate. So we've got to dig into that for sure. And we will hold you to that. But
I think I'll bring Robert on for that one. That'll be really good.
That would be definitely amazing. But just to sort of wrap up on what we're saying, the investor mentality, I think you've just put your finger on it very neatly. I mean, I guess that from the cash flow perspective, money going out of your account is money going out of your account. But there's all the world of difference to an accountant between cash that's swapped for something that has potentially a higher future value, like inventory, versus expenses like, as you say, electricity bill or freight, for that matter, in an Amazon business that just go out of the door. So there's all the difference in the world. And I think you're right, that mentality is an emotional shift as much as an intellectual one as well. And you have to just, it's one thing to intellectually play the game, but putting your money down, that's when the acid test is. And there's another interesting book, just to wrap up with it, a couple of books you've really, I love reading these books. I mean, The E-Myth Revisited is an absolute total classic for all entrepreneurs ever still. And the Simon Sinek sounds good. The other one is Nicholas Nassim Taleb, who wrote a book called Black Swan, which is obligatory reading for all the corporate level, S-level executives in Amazon, apparently. So Jeff Bezos respected it, which is always a good reason to read a book. Sharpest businessman alive, in my opinion. But always the nicest, but we can discuss that. But also, he wrote a book called Skin in the Game, and his contention is really simple, and he's walked his talk, that if you have skin in the game, you're smarter than people who work from the outside. And he quotes Washington politicians making dreadful decisions about various, you know, Middle East policies over the last few decades that have clearly not worked out very well for anybody, and versus himself as an example, when you invest your own money. And he was an options trader and made himself rich and then went and wrote books about it rather than the other way around, which I always trust. And he basically says, you've got skin in the game, you're smarter. And there is something about that, because you have to deal with, you have to have emotional intelligence then, because you've got to deal with your fear, right? And I think You put your finger on it very, very well. So look, some very interesting big picture stuff. Let's wrap that up there. And the next episode, we're going to dig into how you're getting such great results from private label, which is sometimes a very hit and miss affair, and dig into exactly how you're doing such a great job on product selection. But in the meantime, thanks very much for sharing your thoughts on the mentality of a startup in the private label world.
Very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.